Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Come on.
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me. And
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know that know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses that could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them, and there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big, because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
Watch you weave and breathe your story aloud. I go.
We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
You'll be out, man. I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man. You know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right, relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday. You know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised at you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know?
Hold on. It's on me. I had that kid in my sights. Close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
All right. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're going to put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you going to do?
I don't know. But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
Man in his time, you know?
Yeah. He a man today. He a man.
All right. We're here for a full version of It's My House, man. Yesterday I had to apologize to you guys because I did a binge watch the night before last. And I just figured, you know what, let me rest my eyes a little bit, man. Before I knew it, this show was over an hour into the show of dead air or whatever. So we only did like 37 minutes yesterday. Anyway, I'm wide awake, alert. Today's podcast is titled, and we're picking up from yesterday because we didn't do yesterday right at all. I did extend the title. Think Like a Slave. Today's podcast, the live stream, is titled Think Like a Slave, The Inventors. 619-768-2945. I think, now this might be controversial, but I want you guys to hear me out during this live stream. You can question it, call in, and all that. I think what's needed today is a lot of our problems could be solved. Personal level, as well as community level, if we would start thinking more like slaves. Now, I'm talking about the transatlantic slaves, or particularly after they got over here and it was one or two generations in, but they were still legally slaves. Think like a slave. Now, today's podcast is titled Think Like a Slave, The Inventors. And we've heard the cliche or whatever. Necessity is the mother of invention. When I say think like a slave, if you've got a problem that you might find difficult to solve at the moment, I would say think like a slave. Now, I don't mean anything demeaning or going back in time. Here's what I mean by that. many slaves particularly runaway slaves that used the Underground Railroad or slaves that were working at plantation, working in the big house, working out in the fields, they're looking for ways, not all of them, but many of them were looking for ways to do things easier, more efficient, doing things more efficient, maybe doing things where they had, would have more comfort. You know, same with the Underground Railroad, thinking like a slave. Thinking like a slave is to think out of the box. And then becoming innovative. So some of the terms, and matter of fact, I probably need to, let me do it right now while I got you guys on the air. Oh, man, okay, wait a minute. I'm trying to hold it. Okay. Let's see. Oh, come on now. All right, here we go. Slave innovation. Let's see, slave, and I'm typing this in the program though so you guys can see it, Vaders, and inventors. Let's see. Oh, wait a minute. Need to back this up just a little. All right, there we go. Slave innovators, inventors. Problem solvers. Okay. If I think of anything else, I'll just update it. I just updated our program notes here for Blog Talk Radio. When I say think like a slave, I'm thinking about a particular group of people that figured out ways to do things better, more efficiently, or whatever. And it, had they not been in that position of a slave where they had a problem that they had to overcome, we might not have gotten many of any, you know, things that we have today. So let's start the, and I think the best examples of slave innovation and slave inventors, or innovators, would be taking a look at the black invention people and black inventors. So we've got a few of them to talk about today. First one is Sarah Boone. Sarah Boone, that's spelled B-O-O-N-E. Sarah Boone was an American inventor. On October 26, 1892, she obtained a United States patent number 473.563 for her improvement to the ironing board. Boone's ironing board was designed to improve the quality of ironing the sleeves and the bodies of women's garments. Okay, now, let's get a little bit more info on Sarah Boone. Sarah Marshall, which I guess that's her maiden name, was born in Craven County, North Carolina, near the town of New Bern in 1832. So she was born during slavery. Along with her three siblings, she was born into slavery, which prevented her from a normal education. She was educated by her grandfather at home. And she, once again, she was known for, her occupation was inventor and dressmaker. She was artisan. And she's known for inventing an ironing board improvement. That's why I titled this program, Think Like a Slave, The Inventors. She was coming, because she also had 8 children, which that takes up a lot of time. She was also an entrepreneur. Okay. And she was married and everything. So she thought outside of the box. We're talking about something as simple as an ironing board. And what inspired me to even come up with this title, and some of you might think is a crazy title, is I was looking at, you know, we've got some buildings to build, but and we're in the process of raising, either having people donate tools to us or, you know, kicking in $5 or $10 so we can buy the tools. But thinking, you know what? Because I have a great uncle. I haven't met him. He's passed over now. The family calls him Uncle Hosey. I'm thinking that was their way of saying Uncle Jose. But I haven't seen his birth certificate or nothing like that, so let's just go with Uncle Hosey. I've mentioned him on here before. Uncle Hosey only had a 5th or 6th grade education. He was one of my grandmother's brothers or only brother, something like that. And she only had a 5th or 6th grade education. But Uncle Hosey knew how to – he built houses – for family members who were getting married, and I assume that was his occupation. He was a house builder. Now, this guy only had a 5th or 6th grade education, academic formal education as we know it today. So, but he had the skill set where he can go into the woods and source his building materials from the forest, the trees, and whatever was available to him, and put up a legitimate-looking, aesthetically nice-looking house to live in. All right. And I'm thinking, then after thinking about him, because there was no Home Depot. There was no Lumber 84. There was no Menards, Lowe's, or you know, like a Home Depot, whatever, or Ace Hardware. None of that. But he had those skill sets to do that. So then I got to thinking, wait a minute, you know what? Then I got thinking about slavery, the slavery period in the United States, and Jim Crow era, but most of the slave era, pre-1863. And you had slaves that built the big house on plantations, built slave quarters, built a lot of stuff. And the common denominator with those people is they didn't have any power tools. They knew how to make tools. Yesterday, before I dozed off, I have to apologize once again for that. I played chapter 10 of a book, Up from Slavery by Booker T. Washington, Chapter 10. When he was alive and helped found the Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, you know, they had to learn how to make bricks. There was no Home Depot, Lowe's, or any, you know, big box hardware store that they can go to buy bricks. They had to learn how to make bricks in Chapter 10 of the book, Up from Slavery. You can listen to the audio version of it on YouTube for free. They had to learn how to make bricks. They had to learn how to make their own nails. But learning how to do that, I mean, and once again, and Booker T. Washington was legally born a slave. So I said, you know what? I need to think more like a slave. Because a slave, and what's that, you know what, let me put it in my program notes. I just thought about it again. They learn how to make bricks or the expression without, wait a minute, I'm putting this in my program notes as I'm talking to you guys. Oh, that's not how you spell it. O-U-T straw. All right, things are coming back to me. So the expression, you know, making bricks without straw is working with whatever you have. Working with whatever you have. So Uncle Hosey, he worked to build houses. He worked with whatever he had on hand through, you know, the woods of the forest. You know, that was his source of material. He worked what he had to build houses for other people as well as family members. He worked with, because there was no government program, no social services, no FHA, no VA, none of that. When these slaves built these plantations, the big house and all that, they had to. There was no hardware store, no big box store, no Sears, no Amazon. Make bricks without straw. In other words, they had to make their own tools. They had to make their own hammers. They had to make their own saws. There was no electricity at the time. I mean, harnessed electricity as we know it today, where you can plug in. There were no electric companies at the time. So, I mean, go online and look at Thomas Jefferson, the second president of the United States, Monticello. Look at his estate. Look at that big-ass house there. Look at the grounds of the estate. They were built. Making bricks without straw. They worked with what they had. So that's why I'm saying here in 2022, whatever you lack or whatever you think you lack to accomplish the goal of what you have, start thinking like a slave. Slaves know how to, number one, think outside the box. Slaves also work with what they had and made work with what they had. And if you look at me, the pyramids in Egypt, they haven't figured out how that was put together yet. But I can tell you this, though. They didn't use any harnessed electricity as we know it today. There were no electrical power tools as we know it today. They had tools. But there were no power. Nobody used the cordless screwdriver or saw or miter saw to build the pyramids. They had other tools, but they were, you know, if you know what, we have lost that skill set of what I call brain power. That's why I titled this podcast today, Think Like a Slave. Many slaves had to be innovative. George Washington Carver, also born a slave, he was innovative. He thought outside the box. All right, so we just talked about Sarah Boone. Okay, and all this is on Wikipedia. The next person that we want to go to is Ben Montgomery. Let's see. Benjamin Thornton Montgomery was an influential African-American inventor, landowner, and freedman in Mississippi. He was taught how to read and write. Now, let's stop here for a moment on the reading and writing thing. We know during a period of time in this country, the United States, that reading was it was illegal for a black to learn how to read and write. But let's think about this. In order for you to build a house or even a shed, you've got to have some type of literacy, some type of knowledge on measuring. You know, these slaves were not stupid people. Which is another reason why I do not watch slave movies, particularly when they come out of Hollywood, California. You know, think about it. Monticello, and white folks weren't building these structures. Blueprints existed. They had to know how to read something to put the building together. Think like a slave. You know, many slaves were landscape architects. Architects know how to read blueprints. All right, anyway, Ben Montgomery. He too, well, let's read about him, and once again, this is all on Wikipedia. His early life, Ben Montgomery was, here's another one, that's why we call this Slave Entrepreneur Month, was born into slavery in 1819 in Loudoun County, Virginia. Right, that's like a bedroom community of Washington, D.C. In 1837, he was sold south and purchased in Natchez, Mississippi by Joseph Emery Davis, the planter's much younger son, the planter's much younger son, Jefferson Davis, later became president of the Confederate States of America. Montgomery escaped but was recaptured. Davis reportedly inquired closely into the cause of his dissatisfaction, whereby the two men reached a mutual understanding about Montgomery's situation. Davis assigned Montgomery to run the general store and his plantation in Davis Bend, Mississippi. Now, here's Mazer Davis, a white man, and he assigned the running of his general store, which I'm thinking, if you're going to assign a person to run your general store, number one, you have to know how to read. Number two, you have to know how to count. I'm just saying, okay. It was not uncommon for a slave to serve in this position, which is another reason why I don't watch slave movies. Because seldom do they ever put, they don't, he wasn't an outlier, Benjamin Montgomery, although he was born in slavery, but many slaves did, in fact, run plantations. Okay, anyway. On May 21st, 1847, Montgomery's son, Isaiah Montgomery, was born to him and his wife due to Ben's favorite position among Davis Bend's slaves. Isaiah was also given the opportunity of receiving an education, and Montgomery maintained close relationship with his son up until his death. Now, let me cut through a whole lot of this. Ben Montgomery, and we talk about reparations. Reparations comes in many forms. Ben Montgomery, his master arranged for Ben Montgomery to buy the plantation, and he bought it. Now, later on, he couldn't make up the payment, so they took it back. But he did buy that plantation on a payment plan. His son, Isaiah Montgomery, went to another part of, as a matter of fact, let's read about Isaiah 2. Okay. Isaiah Thornton Montgomery, born May 21st, 1847, sunset March 6, 1924. Isaiah Montgomery, Thornton Montgomery, Ben's son, and once again, all this is on Wikipedia. He was born into slavery, and he founded the town of Mount Bayou, Mississippi, and that town still stands today. Matter of fact, Pleasant Stephens' wife, who I had the pleasure of meeting about 3 years ago up in Chicago, she fixed me and Pleasant at a very lovely brunch. His wife is from Mount Bayou, Mississippi. That's a town that was started by a person born a slave that exists today. Once again, think like a slave. He started a town where he started a community where he could feel safe. He started a town where nobody would get lynched. Nobody's ever been lynched here to this day. I'll put it that way. Nobody's ever been lynched in Mount Bayou, Mississippi. He was thinking outside of the box. To have the idea of, you know what, I'm going to buy a certain amount of acres of land and I'm going to start my own town because I don't like these conditions. That's innovative thinking. He worked with what he had. He was thinking like a slave. And I mean that in a positive way. That's why I titled the show today. When I say think like a slave, think outside the box. Work with what you got. Work with what you have. Okay. Let's go to the next one here. Andrew Jackson Beard. And once again, all these things are on Wikipedia. Andrew Jackson Beard was an African-American inventor who introduced two improvements to the automatic railroad car coupler in 1897 and 1899 and was inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame in Akron, Ohio. Okay, now once again, Andrew Jackson Beard, all these people on Wikipedia. Let's see, born in 1849, Andrew Beard spent the first 15 years of his life as a slave on a small farm in Eastlake, Alabama. And, of course, later he became an inventor. Okay, let's go to the next one. Probably do individual features on these people. John Parker. All right, John P. Parker was an American abolitionist, inventor, iron molder, an industrialist. Parker, who was African-American, helped hundreds of slaves to freedom in the Underground Railroad resistance movement based in Ripley, Ohio. He and Underground Railroad, once again, think like a slave. See, now, for some of you, it might be hard for you to stomach when I say that. Because you're used to that Hollywood image. That's what, once again, that's why I don't watch slave movies coming out of Hollywood. When I hear the word slave now, I'm thinking about a person that can make bricks without straw. When I hear the term think like a slave. Now, this is me, my internal filter on the world now. I'm thinking about nothing's impossible to this person. They'll make a way where there seems to be no way. Because it's their thinking. They're forced to think that way. Once again, necessity is the mother of invention. Okay? He saved and rescued fugitive slaves for nearly 15 years. Let's get more into this dude. Okay. Early life. Okay, Parker was born in Norfolk, Virginia in 1827. He was the son of a slave mother and a white father. Born into slavery under the principle of purchase, well, I'm going to butcher that word, so I'm not even going to go there, so I haven't even tried to, but at the age of eight, he was forced to walk to Richmond, Virginia, where he was sold at the slave market to a physician from Mobile, Alabama. While working at the doctor's house as a domestic servant, John was taught to read and write by the doctor's family. Although the law forbade slaves from being educated, and see, this is why this is so crazy. I mean, some of these effed up laws that were on the books back then. Don't educate them, but if you want them to run your store, you got to teach them how to read, write, count, take inventory, keep track of inventory, do audits. If you want them to build Monticello, they got to learn how to read blueprints. Okay. Anyway, the way black history is taught, in my opinion, is all screwed up. Anyway, these were not stupid people. During the apprenticeship and foundry, John attempted to escape to New Orleans by a riverboat and had conflicts with officials. He asked one of the doctor's patients, a widow, to purchase him. He was a negotiator, too. Think like a slave. All right. After taking title to him, she allowed him to hire. All right. Listen to this now. He had learned negotiating skills. So he taught one of his master's patients purchasing him from his master. He brokered a deal. He brokered a business deal. That's business. Shit, in my book, that's high finance. This guy's name's John Parker, John P. Parker. He's on Wikipedia. Okay. All right, now, after she took title to him, she allowed him to hire himself out to earn money. There were many people like John P. Parker that earned a living wage, and probably some of them got rich. Don't get mad at L.A. This is on Wikipedia. I did not write what I'm reading to you guys right now. Think like a slave. And he purchased his freedom. He earned enough money hiring himself out that he was able to get enough money saved up to buy out his contract with his new master. He did that in 1845. Read this with your own eyes on Wikipedia. John Parker, abolitionist. And I'm sure he made a life little side hustle teaching other people how to do this. This man was a businessman, an educator, inventor. Okay. That's John Parker, 1827 to 1900. Next one. Yeah, and some of these people, we're going to have to come back throughout the year and really focusing in on some of these people. I like all these people are fascinating, but the last one, man, See, why don't they do a movie like that in Hollywood? We're going to have to produce that instead of waiting on Hollywood to produce that. Anyway, Lewis Temple. Lewis Temple, an American Negro whale craft maker, blacksmith, abolitionist, and inventor. He was born in slavery in Richmond, Virginia, and moved to the whaling village of New Bedford, Massachusetts. I've been up that way. During the 1820s, where he worked as a blacksmith and married Mary Clark. In 1820, they had no children. Okay, now. Okay, Lewis Temple, once again, he's on Wikipedia here. Lewis Temple, an American Negro whale craft maker, blacksmith, abolitionist, and inventor. Let's see. He is best remembered for the invention of the Temple's toggle, or Temple's blood, which was a harpoon toggle tip based upon Eskimo and Indian harpoon tips brought back to New England by whalers in 1835. After some trials, whalers took to the new improved harpoon. Temple never patented his invention, which resulted in others copying his work and selling it as their own. Temple did live well. Let me read that again. Temple did live well, enough to build a larger shop. So he had a storefront. He had a brick and mortar. Okay. Unfortunately, due to the negligence of a city construction worker, he fell and was injured. He sued the city and won $2,000, which he never received. He died from his injuries from falling down a sewer. Woo, that's rough, man. In May 1854, he was only 53, and his profits from his invention went largely to paying off his debts. S. Lewis Temple. And the last one we're going to do for today. Think Like a Slave. You know, we're going to do a series on this. Think Like a Slave, The Black Inventors. The last one we're going to do for today is, and all this is on Wikipedia, Benjamin Bradley. Benjamin Bradley was an American engineer and inventor. Benjamin's correct surname was Bordley, but since 1859, when the African American Repository published an article wrongly spelling Benjamin's surname Bradley, authors have written about him in an incorrect surname. Okay. Benjamin Bradley, or Bordley, was born a slave. Here we go again. All these inventors were born a slave. And when you think about slaves, you think about all these restrictions. And we're not denying those restrictions. So in order to do what they did, this is what I mean by thinking like a slave. They had to think outside the box. They had to be innovative. Make bricks without straw. Literally, in the case of the Tuskegee students, when Booker T. Washington was down there, they had to learn how to make bricks. They had to learn how to make nails. But they got proficient at it to the point where they went from knowing nothing to being so proficient at it and so professional at it, and producing quality products, that the early stages of Tuskegee Institute, which is now Tuskegee University, their primary customer base was white folks who came to them to buy bricks and nails. There was no formal school where they learned that. Anyway, getting back to Benjamin Bradley. As a teenager, Bradley worked at the printing office. He showed ingenuity and his mechanical skills by the age of 16 when he built a steam engine out of a gun barrel. Now, if that's not innovative, what is? Once again, think like a slave. He built out a gun barrel, pewter, round steel, and other various materials. You know what? There's a movie on Netflix you guys got to check out. I've been trying to get the guy in real life on here. I haven't had no success yet. The boy, hold up. The boy who, the guy's name is in real life is William Kamwamba out of Malawi. This dude, he couldn't, his parents didn't have the school fees. Let me see, William Camp. Parents didn't have, this is modern day, they didn't have the money to send him to school. So the best he can do is go to the little village library there in Malawi. And he learned how to read. He learned how, and you know, this little village library in Malawi, they had donated books. One of the books that was there taught this guy how to build a windmill as a wind turbine. And, oh, the movie on Netflix, I highly recommend it. Kudos to Disney for producing it. The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. That's a modern-day story. William Kamwamba was never a slave, but he demonstrated what I call slave thinking, and I mean that in a positive light. In other words, he worked with what he had, which was a book from the library, and he found, he took the parts from junk. He made it from junk. But it worked, and it generated electricity to power his family's home. I had a chat with him like once or twice, short ones, about right when I was starting It's My House. But by that time, before the movie came out, anyway, white folks discovered him, put him on a tour, got books. They gave him a scholarship to Dartmouth University. So we need to do that. All right, anyway, so where was I? All right, let me go back. Okay. Where was I? Okay, Ben Bradley. I already read through that one. No. Wait a minute. Oh, no. Benjamin Bradley was born a slave in Anne Arundel County, Maryland. That's a suburb of, it's a split. You can say it's a suburb of D.C. or a suburb of Baltimore, Maryland. It has been theorized that he acquired his literacy while learning from his master's children. According to the Maryland State Manumission Records, Bradley's owner was John T. Hammond. Okay, as a teenager, he worked in the printing office. He showed mechanical skills at age 16. And he built that engine. His master was impressed and was able to get him a job as a helper, Department of Natural and experimental philosophy at the Naval Academy in Annapolis. Let's see. At the U.S. Naval Academy, Bradley worked as a helper. According to the African and Repository of 1859, he was paid for. Here's another one. Although he was paid for his work. This is 1859. All right. But the money he had made went to Master, who allowed Bradley to keep $5 a month for himself. That's when $5 was really worth $5. I'll put it that way. All right. As a helper at the academy. Now, you know what? See, the title, he was probably running the whole damn thing. Okay. But for optics, his job title was helper. And this man's got the mind of an engineer. But anyway, that's the way the game was played politically back then. All right. As the helper at the academy, Bradley helped set up science experiments that involve chemical gases. Now, if you know anything about chemistry, particularly if you took chemistry in high school or something like that, chemistry, but you got to, man, you got to be literate. You have to know something about numbers and math. You definitely have to know how to read. All right, anyway. Here's another thing, reason why I'm saying think like a slave. Many of these people had to be more literate, and I don't mean necessarily reading and writing literate, but they had to be more on top of it than whoever their master was or whatever that particular job they were hired out to do. Once again, they were not stupid people. They were not stupid. So, I mean, basically, the way I'm looking at the word slave in the context of what was going on in the United States, it was just a legal distinction. It didn't mean that you were stupid. It didn't mean that you were illiterate. Obviously, many of them were literate. You know, how in the hell are you going to build Monticello with no damn blueprints? I've been out to Mount Vernon, George Washington State at least two or three times outside of Washington, D.C. How in the hell are you going to put that together with them? Come on now. In any event, that's the primary content I have for today. Think like a slave, the inventors. Any comments on it, just give us a call now at 619-768-2945. I'm trying to wrestle with this phone. Okay. So many of these slaves, man, they were critical thinkers. They were the glasses half full people. I guess a lot of them looked at obstacles as opportunities, and they invented things. Any comments on Think Like a Slave, the inventors, 619-768-2945. Let's take a trip down to Baltic. and I'm still here. Not going.
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word because, as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. I mean, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look. Last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been. And has any positive change come to the streets of Baltimore after the riots? And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time. And he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 apiece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
She a dude. She just hit you in your face. She a dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She fuck you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
That nigga, kid, that nigga hurting himself.
You from Nuke State.
It's over. It's over.
All I say
is over. Everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man, fuck it. Let's go across the street.
Shane, Cody, I'll slap the fuck out of one of y'all. He will find God.
Look, the main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you could do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. Half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns, because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield. See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-whack movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-civil rights movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them, which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place, there's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
Takeaway number one, pay yourself first.
I found the road to wealth when I decided that a part of all I earn was mine to keep, and so will you.
But all I earn is mine to keep, is it not?
Far from it. Do you not pay the garment maker? Do you not pay the sandal maker? Do you not pay for the things that you eat? What have you to show for your earnings of the past month? What for the past year? Fool! You pay to everyone but yourself, as well.
Okay, in any event, like I said, we've gone over how many today? Today's title is Think Like a Slave, The Inventors. And today we covered, let me get a count. We covered six. We covered six people. I'll rename them again. This is a quick review. Six people that were all born slaves. All right. And when we think of the word slave, we think about somebody who has a very limited life. Somebody that might have a whole lot of problems. Somebody that can't chart their own destiny. But every one of these slaves, people that were born slaves, okay, they were born slaves, which is a legal description. But they took those restrictions and turned them into opportunities. The term making bricks without straw, that simply means work with what you have. And that's what every one of these six people did. They had a problem. And through creative thinking, through critical thinking, through thinking outside the box, these are slaves now. They looked at their problem as an opportunity. Just as a quick review, let's go through them again. Sarah Boone. Black men, and all these people are on Wikipedia. Okay. Sarah Boone, born in 1832, she was born into slavery. She was an innovator. She was a pioneer. She thought outside the box, and she made improvements to the ironing board, and that's her claim to fame. Doing that while being she was a mother of eight kids, man. Sarah Boone. And mind you, none of the six people that we talked about today, none of them had an internet connection. None of them had any electronics. None of that. The next one, Benjamin Montgomery, also born a slave. Here's a guy that was born a slave that, you see, although the law might have been on the books, you cannot teach us back then. You couldn't teach a slave how to read and write. Well, then how come his master appointed him as the general? He ran the store on the plantation. Now, in order to run a store, implies you are literate. How can you run a store and you don't know how to count? So obviously, Benjamin Montgomery knew how to count. He knew how to read. He knew how to take inventory. He knew how to do audits. His white master trusted his slave, Benjamin Montgomery, to do that. Later on, that same master, now talk about real reparations. His master sold the plantation to Ben. Now, Ben missed some payments somewhere down the road, and, you know, he took the plantation back. But his son, Isaiah Montgomery, also born a slave in Davis Bend, Mississippi. Okay. Ben invented stuff too. Everybody I talked about today, except for maybe one person which I'm about to go through right now, Isaiah Montgomery. Isaiah, and once again, the title of this podcast is Think Like a Slave. Now, here's a person, Isaiah. His father was born a slave. He was born a slave. But here's what I mean by him. Man, I'm embracing this slave word. He thought outside the box. He went and found a patch of land, acres, not a city lot, by the acres. And he started a new town. Pleasant Stephens' wife, and we're going to have her on here one day. Matter of fact, I'm going to call up her house today, see if we can get her on here tomorrow. Mount Bayou, Mississippi.
What's up, guys? Today I'm going to do a video that's a little bit different. It's more of an informational type video on how to get them coins up on YouTube. How can you actually make $20,000 or more a month on YouTube? Everybody and their mama wants to be a YouTuber. What is the number one reason why people want to be a YouTuber? To get them coins though. Everybody wants that vlogger lifestyle, right? Where you can work when you want, travel when you want, you know, stay home with the kids, and still make a bomb-ass income. If you're like me and you really have no idea where to start or how or what you're shooting for, you know what I mean? It's like, I know I want to make $20,000 a month, but how many views do I really need to make $20,000 a month, and what do I need to do to get there? This video will shed some light on some actual figures that you can base your goals on. Let me just start off by saying, I personally have not yet made $20,000 a month, but it's my goal to get there plus, get 20K plus a month. And it should be your goal too. It should be everybody's goal. I do a lot of research about YouTube and trends and things like that. I don't always follow the trends because I'm just stubborn like that. I watch a lot of people who are more successful in YouTube than I am so that I can see what they're doing and kind of mimic that. And that's a really important thing. People say, be genuine, be you.
Okay, the phone dropped. Wait a minute. Okay, my phone dropped. Man, talk about the, I guess somebody doesn't want me to get this information out here on Think Like a Slave. The phone dropped, the call almost dropped, and man, the wires came out for the electric. Anyway, we'll be back. So, we were talking about Isaiah Montgomery. And once again, we're talking about Think Like a Slave. Now, let me give you the full program today, Settle. Think Like a Slave, the inventors. Inventors are basically people who solve problems. So all the people that we featured here today, which was six of them, all six were born into slavery. But they solved problems that other people, including Master Charlie, couldn't solve. That's from ironing boards with Sarah Boone to his son, Isaiah, who founded the town of Mount Bayou, Mississippi, and like I'm gonna call up Pleasant Stephens to see if I can get his wife on here because she's from Mount Bayou, Mississippi. Now Mount Bayou, has a population right now today. 1,533 people. The town was founded on July 12, 1887. And, all right, the town is, oh, man, wait a minute. Okay. I got to go from, acres to, I got to figure out, square miles to acres. Okay, so, oh, come on, man. Wait a minute. Square miles. I'm about to tell you how much land he bought. Square miles. 2 acres. Okay, so he purchased, okay, 0.88 square miles. Okay, so Isaiah Montgomery, he purchased 563.2 acres and started his own town. He was born a slave, but had the mindset of a tycoon, a land baron. Let's see. In Mount Bayou, Mississippi, you can read about that online. Okay. Andrew Jackson, Baird. He was an inventor also of the automatic railroad car coupler. John Parker. Was an American abolitionist, inventor, and industrialist. Once again, all these people were born slaves, and you can read about them on Wikipedia. So, and then let's see, we're trying to get them all out, just a quick review. Lewis Temple, 1800 to 1854, another... He developed a special harpoon for whaling. He was also born a slave. And the last one, Benjamin Bradley, an American engineer and inventor. And if you've done it, if you know anything about engineering, well, just go online and put in engineering problems. You got to know how to read. And you got to be proficient at mathematics. All these people that we feature here today were born slaves. And when I say think like a slave, in other words, they made a way when there was no way. They were creative thinkers. They were critical thinkers. They thought outside the box. They were creative thinkers. They saw problems. Matter of fact, what the normal person would call a problem, these people who thought like slaves saw opportunities. They didn't say it was too hard. They didn't say it couldn't be done. They just kept on at it, whatever that it could have been. From Sarah Boone on, what's a better way? What's a more comfortable way? What's a more efficient way to iron clothes? And she figured it out, and she invented something. Isaiah Montgomery. You know, where's a community where I'm not going to get lynched? Where's a safe place to raise a family and kids during this time of slavery or lynching? Because he was born in the slave era, but lived his whole adult life during Jim Crow. So when he couldn't find a town that was safe enough, he invented one. Because he thought like a slave, and that's where we have Mount Bayou, Mississippi. Like I said, I will be calling Pleasant Stephens' him and his wife, to have them on here tomorrow. Because she grew up in Mount Bayou, Mississippi. So, in our modern times, if you've got an impossible-looking situation that you might need to be solved, you don't know how you're going to get through it, here's what I want you to do. If you're running, it could be a money problem, could be anything. You need to get quiet and draw out your inner slave, and I mean this in the positive light, because what these people did was they thought outside the box. They got creative. They got innovative. I'm sure they asked questions. They went by trial and error. Okay, well, it didn't work. I've done this. I've tried to figure this out 500 times. But on the 501st time, they figured out a way that it worked. Bring out your inner slave and work through what might appear to be impossible situations. Because look at the obstacles that were thrown in their way. Every last one of these people were born into slavery. So obstacle number one was it was illegal for them to learn how to read and write. But they figured out a way to read and write. and stay alive. They figured out a way, because some of these people, matter of fact, all of them were paid. Another misnomer is slaves were not paid. Once again, slave was a legal description. All right. Benjamin Bradley, he was paid. And, you know, who's my favorite person? Is it John Parker? Let me go back and read about John Parker again, because he's my favorite person with the slave thing to think about today. I think it's him. All right, here it is. All right. John P. Parker, born 1827, sunset January 30th, 1900. Hell, we might have a John Parker, you know. All right, his birthday's in January, so it's past. We wanted to celebrate him some kind of way. All right, Parker was born in Norfolk, Virginia in 1827. He was the son of a slave mother and a white father. Born into slavery, at the age of eight, he was forced to walk from Norfolk, Virginia to Richmond, Virginia, where he was sold at the slave market to a physician from Mobile, Alabama. All right. Here's another thing to think about, another way to look at slavery, too. The primary reason why we were brought over here to America, and I already know that there's some people that we were, some of us was already here. That's another podcast. But the reason why ancestors that were brought over here from Africa is for one primary reason, to make money. And we had the skill sets and the brains to make money. But they don't highlight that in your Hollywood productions, which, once again, for the gazillion time just today, that's why I don't watch Hollywood slave movies. Anyway, getting back to Parker here. All right. Here's my favorite profile for that. During his apprenticeship in a foundry, John attempted to escape to New Orleans by a riverboat and had conflicts with officials. Okay, so he survived that. So obviously, he had decent negotiating skills. All right, he asked one of his doctor's patients, there's that social capital I keep talking about, real social security is how you get along and what you can capitalize with, as well as other people capitalize with you, with other human beings. What are your social skills? He was not a belligerent Negro. That's a skill set. He asked the doctor's, one of the doctor's patients, a widow, to purchase him. The man had negotiating skills. This guy brokered a deal that one of the doctors and physicians that he worked for. Now, this is a slave now. Once again, think like a slave. This guy brokered a deal that involved himself and say, look, he talked this one person into buying him from another person. It gets better after that. All right. After this lady, his new slave master, just like you got a title to your car, or title to your house. Well, back then, if you were a slave, somebody held title to you. This guy negotiated his going from one place to the other. To be honest about it, he was probably sticking her. I'm just saying, it happened. After taking title to him, she allowed him to hire himself out to other people for money. Now, this destroys the myth of slaves weren't paid. In some cases, the slave master hired out the slave just like a rental car. You know, the slave master gets his cut and you keep the balance of it. So they were working deals like that. Anyway, he earned enough from hiring himself out legally under his new slave master legally where he was able to purchase his freedom from her for $1,800 in 1845. He earned the money through his work and two of the mobile iron foundries and occasional odd jobs. Now, read this for your own self, John Parker, abolitionist, on Wikipedia, in Wikipedia. That's my favorite one for today. A whole bunch of black folk did the exact same thing in the state of Maryland, and one of the first cases that we covered last week here on, because here at It's My House, it's Slave Entrepreneur Month. Every day we at least feature one slave entrepreneur that went from slavery to entrepreneurship, owning their own business. Some of them got wealthy. Well, in the state of Maryland, a whole bunch of former slaves did what John Parker did, and chartered a boat, and they made a voyage from, I guess, Baltimore Harbor up, you know, up in Maryland, to the west coast of Africa, and started, and for the people who haven't read it, it's on Wikipedia, look up the Republic of Maryland. They started their own country, which now today is Maryland County, Liberia. It still exists, but now it's Maryland County, Liberia. And then one of the other features that we did last week, Sonoke County, Liberia, that group of people, another set of slaves now, of former slaves, they bought over 2.5 million acres of land, and that still exists today. So get quiet and, man, bring out your inner slave. You got a problem? That inner slave can solve it for you. I've embraced this whole slave thing, man. I'm all into it. That's why we bring. I brought you six today. Typically, just give you one a day. But you got six today. One woman and the rest men. And 407. I'm coming to you as soon as my board unstable. Here we go. 407 area code, your mic is open.
Good day, Grand Rising. Good day. This is Beata with Soul Purpose Healing and Health and Wellbeing with Beata on the Female Solution Blog Talk Show. I just wanted to say this is a brilliant topic, L.A. Thank you for bringing this out about slavery and how slaves were more creative because they didn't have a lot of options or choices. And now I just want to say, as we come out of this Twilight Zone episode we've all been in on planet Earth, this is so appropriate to encourage people to limit your options, create what you can do with your great mind. Because I was thinking about the scripture in Isaiah 53 that says, all we like sheep have gone astray. And we all be, many people are trusting in technology and their egos instead of their brain that the slaves had and their strong body. So a brilliant topic again. And I'm thinking even myself as I'm renovating this small house for myself, of how few things I need in my new place so that I can just be dependent on my source, spirit, creator, for everything that I need or even desire. And that's what we lost in the United States and this technology industry era that we're in, that we can trust in our phones. We can go to Google, any place, and find out what to do instead of having the knowledge that our great-great-grandparents had. My grandfather built his own house. He didn't, like you saying, he didn't have any of the little options that we have today, Google or any of that. He just had wisdom and information and knowledge from his own parents. So great topic. Thank you, L.A., for bringing this out.
And I've got a request for you. Now, you talk about health and wellness on Fridays on the Female Solution. and you have Full Purpose Healing on Sunday. I would like to find out what the slaves did on that plantation and throughout and on the railroad, Underground Railroad, how they were able to keep healthy. I imagine one of the things that they did was what we call organic food. That's what they grew normally anyway. But, you know, if they got sick, you know, what kind of home remedies did they come up with?
Well, they
stuff
knew,
like that,
they knew
you know.
What to get. They knew what to get out of the garden for their health. They had collard greens, for one, which is basically a weed. And they knew, I think slaves knew from even whether you were here before as a Native American, indigenous, and you knew about plants and herbs, or you came from Africa, they probably had some knowledge of plants and herbs. But one thing, L.A., they didn't have Kentucky Fried Chicken and all this processed food. It goes to show you, like my dad said when he was in New Orleans growing up, they fasted a lot because they didn't have any money. So slaves probably fasted.
But when you fast, you rest your digestive system.
Yes, and it strengthens the body because guess what? You're out in the sun. The sun is providing your nourishment and nutrition. The sun doesn't just give you vitamin D. That sun is working in your – you're like a solar panel that the sun hits and activates hormones, vitamins, all kinds of things get activated when that sun hits your skin. This is knowledge we've lost. Those slaves knew that. They were out there in the sun. That's the one main nutrient they had to keep them healthy was being out in the sun all day. And then they weren't eating hamburgers and fries and cheeseburgers and all that and all this dead food. They were fasted. They ate minimally. That's what kept my father healthy when he was young, and he lived to be 95 years old because he had a strong foundation of not eating a lot of junk food.
Yeah, that's right. They didn't have no McDonald's or nothing like that. You brought up some very good points. Number one, our bodies are solar panels. So when you're out there, your body's generating stuff. So they were out there. You're right. And then the food that they ate. You're on Fridays on Female Solution. Give us that information.
Health and Well-Being with Viada on blogtalkradio.com / the Female Solution under, and that's every Friday morning. And then you can call in 515-605-9325. We've taken this health and well-being to a whole new level because we have been, what's been revealed to us the last 2-3 years is that this whole health, sick care system is evil and does not want to promote health at all. It wants to stay in business and make money. Pharmaceuticals running the show the last 2 years saying that the only option you have to balance your body and kill the viruses that are all over the place is a drug. So we're wiser now, smart. That's why Canada is out there in below zero weather. People out in below zero weather protesting. They want their freedom back because we woke now. We woke now. And as one woman said, F. Fauci and all you mofos who've been promoting this lie.
So that's what we've
taken it to a whole new level, promoting a new healthcare system. The healthcare system, not this sick care system we've all been under.
Let me ask you this. How do you think slaves would have handled this COVID thing we're going through right now?
Well, I don't know because they wouldn't have had media. Media has fueled this whole thing. Media, every day, look how many people have died. Look how many people are in the hospital. Look how many people have died. Look how many people in the hospital. They did that for, a whole year. And then, we've got their solution. It's a virus. It's a vaccine. It's a there's a media. They didn't have media. Mm. I can't even answer that. There was word of mouth. And nobody would have been spreading these damn lies by word of mouth.
And they didn't get no vaccinations, to my knowledge.
The vaccination was the sun, L.A. The sun was the vaccination.
Right. There you go.
Keeping the body, the viruses on. People have to really get it. The viruses are in us. This country, along with all the other evil governments, have been promoting a war on our bodies. not just a virus, because viruses are everywhere, on our skin and our bodies. Now, it's our job to balance these viruses, microbes, and bacteria that are in the trillions in our body. We've been lied to on such a high level now. That's why people are pissed and out in below zero weather, raising the Canadian flag, saying, "Now we're tired of this bullshit. Let's move on. Trudeau, you're going to have to go." I don't care what Trudeau does. I don't know what he's planning to do up there, but the Creator is motivating people to fight for their freedom.
Okay. Well, Eric, I don't know what you have planned for this coming Friday for the female
new
salute.
Healthcare system. That's every Friday. We promote how to understanding the body temple, what it does, every part of the body, what it does to help you stay in good health.
Well, if you can throw in before the end of the month some kind of way, if you can find some one of these people that were born slaves, and if you know if it might be recorded some line. You've already put out some, but if you can put a name to some of those, you know, like Harriet Tubman, she did probably everything you just named. But she knew how to identify herbs and all that type of stuff. But, you know, it would be, because I'm just fascinated
by the
whole thing.
The peanut man was.
You know what? You're right. George Washington Carver.
Yeah, he's like one of the best examples of recognizing the herb, using herbs for healing in the body and every other thing. Peanuts, even made about 100 different ways.
He too was born a slave.
Right.
Yeah, he too was born a slave. So, well, all right. Well, on that note, Viata, thank you for calling in. We're going to wrap it up for today because we're in overtime. Everyone, will be back tomorrow with another installment of here on, what do you call it, Slave Entrepreneur Month. Everyone have a good rest of the day.